This is The People's Show with Bik Nizar and Randy Janda.
Hour two of The People's Show, Bik Nizar, Randy Janda.
It's all good.
Drop the D.
My name is always being ripped to shreds, so Bik, I thought we were tight.
No, my voice tightened up there.
Was that okay?
And I lost. Drop the D.
The excuses.
There.
This guy has more excuses than Mike Smith.
Sometimes you can't even say your own name, Randy.
Yeah, I combined it with Jamie, actually, and I called my, I think it was like Randy Jamba or something like
Amazing.
That. Amazing. So, sounds like a juice franchise. I'm onto something here.
Janda juice.
Not bad.
Anyways, Bik, Randeep, you heard Lena's tag in running the board. Also, Lindsay Horsting running the board today. If you want to chime in as well, 650-650, the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox, the smart alternative. Visit Dunbar Lumber on Bridge Street in Ladner or Arbutus in Vancouver, online at dunbarlumber.com. Well, we will do wrong answers only this segment. I forgot to get to it last segment. We had some good conversations, though.
Yeah, we've been talking about coaching, right shot defensemen.
The people are interacting in the inbox.
Yeah.
You direct the show.
We'll remind you what wrong answers only is. So yes. Get them in so we can hit them up a little bit later on. But who was Mike Smith blaming last night after the goal? Arms up in the air, looking into the skies. Who was he blaming?
650-650 if you want to get those submissions in. Before we get back to the hockey talk, soccer. Excited for the matches that are coming to BC Place, Iran, and Curaçao.
June 5th and 9th, and now the squad has been released of who is making the trip over. Remember, this is a CONCACAF Champions League, and there's also the Nations League, I should mention, and of course, they tune up for the World Cup versus Iran. You got some big boys coming out to Vancouver for this one. Kyle Larin, Alfonso Davies, Jonathan David, Tayshaun Buchanan, Atiba Hutchinson, Steven Eustachio. When we're talking about the big players on this squad, no discredit to anybody else, but let's start with those guys because those guys are the and Milan Borjan as well. We can't forget Mr. Sweatpants. All of those
sweatpants
guys
in style, man.
All those guys are
I'm
making the
trip. I'm showing up in sweatpants for that Iran game.
If you pull on a keeper jersey and like gray sweatpants and you're sitting in the crowd, Bik, forget the DK Metcalf diet. This is the challenge we have for Bik.
I'm wearing sweatpants for the game.
Excellent.
100%.
Canada Soccer, if you ever start selling your jerseys online, which I can't believe they still have not come around to do.
Sell sweatpants as well.
Sell those sweatpants as well. Bik will buy both. But that's the level of competition you're going to have in that matchup. Because once they included Iran to the schedule, you knew they were going to bring a solid squad.
Yeah.
So if there are any doubts of, hey, it's June, European soccer season's over, maybe some of these guys are taking a rest, you can throw that out the window because you've got the big boys making this trip.
The place to be on June 5th and June 9th at BC Place for those matches. That's exciting, man. Get that World Cup tune up and start to gauge, hey, where are you, right? I've got a lot of excitement for the Qatar World Cup. Never thought Canada would qualify for a World Cup. So I'm pumped. And maybe with some rose-colored glasses, I'm viewing, hey, the draw, a bit friendly. It's going to be tough. Belgium's phenomenal.
Morocco's going to be a tough out.
Croatia, we know.
Yeah.
Aging, but still, like...
Quality is quality, man. Like, if you watch Luka Modric play for Real Madrid, you don't need...
We'll see him play in 3 days.
Yeah. He's a scary proposition in any midfield. I don't care if he's 45. But this thing, you know, this matchup, especially the Iran one for Vancouver, is big. We've been talking a lot about Canada soccer going elsewhere. Toronto, Edmonton. This is a chance for Vancouver.
Hamilton.
Vancouver has an opportunity to show up here. And you've got an opportunity now, from everything I've heard, feels like the ticket sales are, like, the Iran matches specifically, near sellout.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if it's not there already, it's getting pretty close. So this is going to be a big moment for the city of Vancouver, and let's see how it goes, though. But it will be a strong squad showing up, pretty much all the heavy hitters. Not even missing one of them. We'll see what happens in the next couple of weeks. Guys are training. They're still finishing up some matches. So hopefully, you know, there are no injuries and all of that. You don't want any of that. But as of right now, for next couple of weeks, in the lead up to this matchup, it looks like all the big boys are making it out.
Fantastic to see. There's also some headliners coming to town. P&E putting out their concert series lineup. You were just telling me some of the names here.
Yeah, so this is...
And I was like, how do... Are the tickets like $1 billion? Because this is a huge lineup
here. As you know, I'm a proud former employee of the P&E back in the day, as I've mentioned on this show. Rides attendant way back in the day. It was the best high school job. On this summer night concert series that they have every single year, Nelly.
Let's go.
With Country Grammar, EI.
Ride With Me.
Ride With Me.
Hot
all of those.
Here.
He's coming out. You got TLC.
Air Force Ones.
Air Force Ones. You got TLC and Shaggy making the trip. They're going to have a joint concert. So they're, I don't know who's opening for who. I would assume.
Oh, Shaggy's open for TLC.
Yeah, TLC is, you know, one of the best of all time.
Creep, man.
That.
No
waterfalls,
scrubs.
All of that.
Unpretty.
If you're looking for other genres, though, right? Nelly and TLC is kind of where I'm at. I think you agree with that.
Shake a tail feather, man.
Older generation. I won't be doing that. Older generations, Beach Boys.
Strong.
Chaka Khan and Patti LaBelle.
Strong.
Different demo, right? You got Bare Naked Ladies, Gypsy Kings, Blue Rodeo, like everything, man.
Blue Rodeo, eh?
Blue Rodeo. I'm not, okay, that's not my genre.
I don't know if I can go to
that. I got love for the Gypsy Kings a little bit.
If I'm remembering correctly, it was either Blue Rodeo or April Wine. I'm pretty sure it was Blue Rodeo. They came to a music festival up north.
Okay.
They used to do radio up north.
Yeah.
And
that's like your, I used to work in a memorabilia shop from Dan Riccio. Comes up like 3 times a week.
Yeah, but like nobody is cool came to the north.
But Blue Rodeo.
Blue Rodeo did. And they were like, I think the final, again, I can't remember if it was April Wine or Blue Rodeo, but nevertheless, the band manager, whoever it is, I had to introduce them. They were the final act of the night. They're like, hey, here's what we got to say. Album this and all this is coming. I was like, cool, cool, cool. Got it. He's like, as soon as the music starts playing, though, get off the stage. So, got it. I get up there. I'm like, ladies and gentlemen. And then the music starts playing. And I'm like, I still have to read like 30 seconds worth of stuff here. And the music's already starting. And I was like, Blue Rodeo. And I just like got off the stage. And the manager's like, what the hell is that? That was the worst intro we've ever gotten at a music festival. I was like, you told me as soon as the music starts playing, get off the stage. He's like, the band's music, not the,
oh,
like,
man.
The guys behind just having like the track under me. And I was like, I don't know, man. You said music. I got off the stage.
And then Bick went immediately home after that.
Like, oh, right. I felt shame immediately. I did not stick around for the performance. I was humiliated. And like I remember like even as I was walking off the stage, the drummer's looking at me like shaking his head like, what was that?
The manager's like, man, you had one job. You had one job. Just say a couple of sentences and you're good to go.
I had a cue card in my hand. And I was like, literally, ladies and gentlemen, pause, what's going on here? I like looked behind me and I was like, Blue Rodeo! I'm pretty sure it was Blue Rodeo.
So what you're saying is my connections at the P&E
won't help me.
No. If there's somebody introducing Blue Rodeo on the Summer Night series, concert series, it has to be you so you can write that wrong in your life.
No.
Yes.
That's done.
I have connections at the P&E. Let me talk to them. Bick, would you do it if I made it happen?
No.
Come on.
I'm mortified. I never respect their work. Good band and all that. I can never like put myself in that room again.
Great question from Rager here. Man, when are they going to get classified for one of these concerts? Never. Rager, never. You know how I stand, where I stand on classified. Not a fan. You know the rapper classified?
Yeah.
He's a dude.
The implication being it's like, oh, because he's Canadian, you have to like him?
Yes. That's what Rager alleges.
It's fine.
But you don't have to like him.
No.
No, you don't.
What are the big classified songs? I feel like I was a classified fan for a while there.
A while too long?
Was Inner Ninja his song? Yeah, it is, isn't it?
Okay, that's...
I like that song.
You? All right. Okay, now you're with Rager on this
for one. For a bit. All right, but I'm pumped. Nelly, TLC, Shaggy, Mr. Boombastic,
no, it should be a good summer. I always rep P&E, man. Best high school job ever. Just walk around, work at like the coolest rides.
You worked at the rides too, not the games, right?
No, there was no like...
Was there like a hierarchy?
Okay, games, you have to like get people to come over to you. So you gotta you gotta have that little hustle in you.
Showmanship?
Yeah, you gotta make your game cool, right?
Is that why you're so shady now? It's like, hey, I learned it from the streets of the P&E.
No, but it was kind of like a snake oil salesman, right? Yeah. Like, hey, come on in and knock this... With rides, we were the cool ones. We didn't have to sell anything. Yeah. People came to us.
So, like,
at some point, that coolness wore off me.
Is there like a break room at the P&E? Is like
oh, yeah.
the cafeteria?
Oh,
yeah. It's like the cool kids sit at one side, like the ride people
oh,
sit
yeah,
on
yeah.
one side, and the
game. I don't know if it still exists, but back in the day, it was definitely a hierarchy. Definitely right. a hierarchy.
And you did the music one.
Yeah, the music
coaster.
Express was awesome because you could choose your own music. So
whoa,
you could
really?
Play
it's
like,
not like sanctioned music?
Oh, no, no. As long as it didn't have cursing or anything like that.
So you're just like plugging in the iPod and away you go?
Oh, back in the, well, this I'm dating myself here, but the system was like all CDs. So
CDs,
you had,
yeah.
It was actually more complicated because you have to go through the right CD. You have to make sure you go to the track list. That's what all the cool kids did.
What was Randeep's set list?
Take a wild guess. Take
Tupac?
Yeah, there was definitely yeah. some Tupac at that point. You know, a lot of rap. A lot of rap.
All right.
I had a love for the Fugees back in the day as well.
So all the times I had fun back in the day. You would have been operating.
I would have been that guy.
No kidding.
One of them, anyways.
All right. That's fun. Again, can't wait for the summer. June 5th, Canada versus Iran at BC Place. And that looks sounds awesome for the P&E. All right. Let's get to it. We haven't done it yet. A lot of good submissions coming in, though. You saw that goal yesterday. Rasmus Anderson shoots from his own end all the way through the air in on Mike Smith. Who, you know, we were saying, how do you let that in? Some people were just like, clearly he couldn't see through the bodies. Dude, I don't care. This isn't a screen in the middle of the gate or on a power play. Puck's at the other end. Like, you should be able to see that, even if you see it after it gets through all the bodies. You should be prepared for something like that.
There are some things you just can't do in your job, right? Like, everybody has. In radio, if you curse on air,
yeah,
that's on you. That you can
don't
blame anybody you want, but there are certain things in our profession you can't do. Mike Smith as a goalie. That is the thing you cannot do. You cannot let a goal in from, 130 feet away. You can't do it.
And there's no one to blame but you.
And we had a couple of texters saying, guys, look at the angle. It was all, like, the lighting. It's like, no!
He couldn't see it through the jerseys in the crowd. It's like, what? He has to deal with this every day. I think he can see a puck through the jerseys.
Wrong answers only. Who was he blaming after that goal last night?
650.
And I think the answer is so obvious, guys. He couldn't see through his hair. His hair fell in front of his eyes. Didn't have it tied back. He had the wild man look going on, and it cost him a goal. That's the obvious answer here.
If you're going to blame his sight lines, at least say he was, as Rager is texting in, daydreaming about visiting McDavid's house.
Ooh, with the view.
Speaking of sight lines, the views, right? You're just like, oh, my current angle of looking at the play reminds me of Conn McDavid's view.
That dead grass in the backyard. People can't get it out of their minds.
It's getting hype. I wonder if the third round is as majestic as McDavid's elevator.
Or as sterile as his living room. We got this one. 650. Unsigned. Mike Smith was blaming David Rittich. Flashbacks. Big Save Dave had some bad moments. None of them were that bad, though. They were pretty bad, but I don't even think he has that on his resume.
Wrong answers only. He's blaming Vancouver gas prices for that goal because of Alberta. Two-pronged joke here.
There you go. We got this one. Mike Smith blamed Dan Colucci for letting that one go. Mike on the road. Just imagine that, being like a high-end goalie and just thinking of another goalie in that moment.
This one, Marcus and Gibson's. He was blaming his agent. He was promised a tee time by this time of the year if he re-signed in Edmonton. I'm trying to sift through some of the old texts that we got in. It's like, he wasn't blaming everyone. This one. Wrong answers only. Only Mike Smith thinks he is so old, thinks two-line passes are illegal.
This one from Vicky and Poco. Wrong answers only. Mike Smith was trying to figure out how to get the softballs in the basket game at the P&E.
He's blaming Nearly Neil for singing Sweet Caroline. Gary from North
Bay. Wait, has Nearly Neil switched to Alberta? Is he in Edmonton? Do we know this?
Actually, I don't know.
Actually, that'd be a scoop more than a wrong answer.
Hey, man, a gig is a gig.
Hey, that's exactly what the Calgary Canucks are saying these days as well. Hey, we got this one. Wrong answers only. He was blaming Vesa Toskala. Man, okay. The Vesa Toskala slander that I hear on like random radio shows, whether it's out east or wherever, just brutal.
Stay strong.
Just brutal.
Stay strong. Snoop the dog, he was blaming the hooligans with their laser pointers. Kind of like the African Cup of Nations.
Oh, yeah.
Mo Salah with the green face because so many laser pointers are on him.
We got this one, unsigned. If you didn't listen to the show yesterday, I suggest you go back because it's only going to make sense for that reason. Mike Smith was blaming Victor from Days of Our Lives.
Yeah, it's only going to make sense if you go back. We're still getting soap opera texts. Someone texted in, did you know Jennifer Aniston's dad is Victor from Days of Our Lives? I guess.
I had no idea.
Oh.
Legitimately, I had. Victor is Jennifer Aniston's dad?
On Days of Our Lives.
Oh, I thought in real life. I was like, okay.
No, in real life, the actor that plays Victor on Days of Our Lives is actually Jennifer Aniston's dad.
Had no idea.
But we got texts about that today.
Unbelievable.
For all the people that said, why are you guys talking about soap operas? Because it resonates with people. 24 hours later, still getting content in our inbox.
Wrong answers only. Mike Smith was upset with his Angry Birds score. Hey, man. You lose it a couple of games? He can live with you for a bit.
Oh, he was blaming the spicy pork. Keith the Water Ooh. Guy. Nice reference to round one there.
All right. All right. I like that. We got this one here. Wrong answers only. He was blaming Jim Benning because Jim Benning is, of course, the individual that built the Calgary Canucks.
This one from Mike and Tawasin. He was blaming Kodak Black for being up in the suites.
Oh, that's where he was looking.
Yeah, he was looking up in the suites like, what's going on here? I'm trying to play a hockey game here.
We have a correction. Isn't Victor on All My Children? Yeah. Sure.
Maybe, but he's definitely on Days of Our Lives.
I don't know. I
believe it was Victor Kiriakis.
The
actor's name.
I mentioned this yesterday. I'm loyal to General Hospital, so I don't pay attention to
that. Yeah, I got it right. It was Victor Kiriakis.
Okay, so you clearly watched the show. Like, there was a stretch of your life, like for a year or something like that, you were all in.
Watched it way too much.
We got this one. Wrong answers only. Mike Smith was paying respect to Tommy Sallow. Okay, was that one worse than the Tommy Sallow one? Because I feel like Tommy Sallow, remember he kind of did like the shoulder shrug? And like he was out of it. Like at least Mike Smith can be like, I didn't see it. His body mannerisms like, dude, it's behind me? With Sallow, he actually tried to make the save. That one to me was worse.
Why are people texting in? That's not a true fact. It absolutely is a true fact. I'm still hung up on the Victor Kiriakis.
Yeah,
like the actor who plays Victor is not Jennifer Aniston's dad in real life. Yes, it is. I don't have to tell you.
We got to get him on the show. We got to figure out how to do that.
Anyways.
We got this one from Table Saw James. Mike Smith was blaming the Beck Glass insurance girl for that moment. And that wink. It's a Sportsnet advertiser on the broadcast. Maybe the wink threw him off.
Mike Smith was blaming crystals he bought from Adam Gaudette, Parkinson Gibson. Oh. Come on.
Okay, now that you mention it, that goal was a bit of like a kick in the face. It absolutely was. Totally.
Mike Smith was blaming Ottinger for not beating the Flames earlier. He's channeling his Ottinger right now. He's having no problem toppling the Calgary Flames.
Coquitlam Justin coming in with, he didn't have his reading glasses on. Can you imagine that? Just having like the old, the dad style reading glasses.
I would love if a goalie had like the Horace Grant goggles on underneath. Like, hey man, they're prescription. All right.
Or like,
I need them.
Or like the 60-year-old dad bifocals. Just, you can see it through the mask.
Could you have a prescription visor?
Ooh. That's true innovation right there.
I don't like, you think you just wear contacts, but.
Yeah, but that's not fun. There's no fun in that.
Prescription visor. I'm here for it. This one. Smith. Mike Smith promised Gary Bettman a tie game in the third period. So he wasn't blaming anyone. He was just saying, I cashed in, Gary. I gave you what you wanted.
What was the over-under in last night's game? I'm assuming 5.5 or 6.
I would assume 6.5.
So, yeah, he was ensuring that the over hit. One step closer. One step closer.
Lee, someone was going to fit it in. Lee did the hard work here. Wrong answers only. Mike Smith was looking for his cool, wet rag that didn't arrive in time. Maybe he just had like the cold compress on his head.
Yeah,
all good.
He strikes me as a bandana guy. Cool, wet rag guy.
Not a lot of bandana guys anymore.
No, okay, so.
You know, like Kelly Rudy had the.
Yeah, he had the
baby blue bow tie.
Yeah, yeah. That was nice. I don't know if there's any others.
No.
I'm drawing a blank here.
I feel like. There was one other one.
Trevor Kidd wasn't him, was it?
No, I was going to say Trevor Kidd, but no, there was another goalie like that. Oh, that's going
to
bother me.
We'll have
John something?
John something. That really narrows it down.
Sorry. Yeah.
We got this one. Mike Smith just saw the BMW on the seawall video and was wondering what Rishu was doing. Keith the water guy coming in with that one. I think a lot of us are wondering what Rishu was doing in that BMW.
And he was just out for a rip, man. He was just out for a rip. All right. Good thoughts coming to the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. He was blaming Markstrom for not making the save. Markstrom had his own troubles last night, too.
Yeah, Markstrom, not only last night, Markstrom has some troubles of late. How much of this is, you know, those adjustments that you make with Ian Clark back in the day? He's looking a little rusty right now.
Over the course of time, you get further and away. Yeah.
You know, he played 63 games in the regular season. You need a reset. He's just looking like he's kind of lost his crease a little bit. He's a little too active for my liking.
I'm just, you know, last night, I do think Calgary was the better team last night, but, you know, you make massive mistakes and just you're not going to be able to overcome.
No, and one thing I liked about the Flames during the regular season was that, you know, when they made mistakes,
they just showed the Smith
goal. Yeah, we're watching it on Sportsnet right now, actually.
So good.
The Rasmus Anderson goal. I love how the cameraman thought it was Zadorov that scored first. And you look at Zadorov doing the smack talk, even though he didn't score.
You didn't score. You got a lucky goal. He's like getting pumped
up. He's even doing like the machine gun kind of like cheer, right? Like where he's just kind of like rapid fire celebration.
He's hulking up.
Oh, yeah.
That's what he was doing.
But on top of all of that, where I look at Calgary's, like during the regular season, they had those moments in games. They could swing the momentum very easily. Maybe they get rattled for a period, but they're coming back pretty strong outside of a couple of games. They don't have that in the series, man. They look rattled. They look like they're seriously doubting themselves. When a team starts to do that, kind of like the St. Louis Blues as well, you know you're lost.
Now, Milan Lucic was putting on the brave face meeting with media earlier today. What was the exact quote?
It's one of my favorite quotes of all time.
Now, I want to be very clear before you say it. Like, everything that he's saying is factual.
It is. Hashtag facts only.
And if you're the Calgary Flames, this is how you have to think of it.
But it's such a great quote. In order to win three games, you've got to win one game. You have to start off by winning one game. End quote.
Now, like, you think this is
I think that's hilarious. It's like, of course he's going to say it, but the Calgary Flames, in a tweet, not only send up the four-minute interview with Milan Lucic, but the quote that they choose to highlight is that one. There's 4 minutes of other things he said, yet that is the one. That is the one you're saying, don't lose hope, Calgary Flames fans. Because remember, in order to win three games, you got to win one.
Just, you have to approach it as if you're winning one game three times.
That's fine.
Again, it's the right way to look at it.
The media member in me is just like, you could have found something better than that. You could have found something better than that.
But that's not a Milan Lucic problem. That's a Calgary social media.
Admin, get your things sorted out. They're selling hope.
Mike in Victoria is mad we didn't read his wrong answers only. The thing is, we already got a McDavid's house submission. But nevertheless,
it's a bingo card. If we hit it once, it's off the board.
We'll read it here.
It's kind of like the Cool Wet Rag or Jim Benning.
Yeah.
No Louis Erickson one. If you want to get creative, come with a Louis one.
Wrong answers only. Only Mike Smith is blaming Connor McDavid and his house for the huge party because they had to celebrate getting out of the first round and he was still hungover. He didn't see that shot when it went in.
He does have an impressive wine cellar there.
That's right.
It's the one thing from McDavid. McDavid's house is awesome. I'd love to live in that house. Don't get me wrong. The view is what we make fun of. But the most impressive thing in that house, wine cellar. If I could somehow transport that into my house, maybe my garage or something, that's what I'd do.
Yeah, you do strike me as a big wine cellar guy.
Okay, man. Love wine. Love some good red wine.
Would you have a wine cellar like behind a hidden door? I've always wanted a hidden door in my place. That's really all I want. Just like a bookcase.
We are so bold talking about this in Vancouver's real estate market.
I know.
Like, man, if I could get a door at a reasonable price, I'd be happy. We want a room behind said door.
A hidden room behind like a bookcase to a wine cellar. That's just...
Yeah, that's some like Batman stuff.
Yeah, that's elite.
Bic wants a Bic cave.
100%. 100%. All right. Bic Nizar, Randy Janda. We'll talk to Mike McKenna on the other side. He'll join us from dailyfaceoff.com. Long time NHL goalie. We're talking to him about Markstrom's struggles. What does he have to do to get back, or does he even have time to get his game back on track? All in the way, home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
This is the People's Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Here's Bit Nizar and Randeep Janda.
Bit Nizar, Randeep Janda, the People's Show here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Play Now Sports, bet on hockey like never before with Play Now Sports, your local BC Sportsbook. We'll talk to Mike McKenna from DailyFaceoff.com, former NHL goalie, in just a couple of minutes. Some breaking news, though, across the NHL. A non-playoff team, well, they made the playoffs, but they're out now, making some news.
The Washington Capitals will be without one Tom Wilson, who had a torn ACL, for the next 6 to 8 months, meaning he's probably going to be returning in December or January, so he's going to miss a couple of the months, you know, starting off the season. So this is a guy, remember, he got injured in the playoffs. They ended up losing that playoff series. And eventually, this is an important player on that top line. They had TJ Oshie playing on the top line, but for the first for the first 2 months of next season, by the looks of it, Tom Wilson will not be playing for the Washington Capitals as he continues his rehab at that point.
Does that put them into the right-wing market?
I don't know, man. They don't have much cap room. They're going to have, you know, obviously, on IR, Tom Wilson, that frees up some space, so they might be able to make something.
Five and change.
But do they make some changes this year? Do they maybe move out some salary in order to bring in something new? Because they will be without a premier winger, really, a unicorn of a winger that he has shown to be. Everybody wants their own Tom Wilson. Now the Washington Capitals won't even have their Tom Wilson.
So, obviously, wish him a speedy recovery, getting back into the lineup. But 5.166 will be on long-term injury reserve for the Washington Capitals. And, man, they do not have a lot of pieces, like, streaming into the lineup either.
No.
I know Brett Leeson was a guy.
Alexi Protas is another player that played in, you know, Prince Albert on the same team as Brett Leeson as well. So, another option there, and those are guys that...
Bigger bodies, too.
Bigger bodies, profile the same way. So what you'd probably have is, if they stay with the same team, Mantha or Oshie play on the first line, and then you get one of those guys to come, you know, to play on the third or fourth line. But, yeah, there's no real replacement for Tom Wilson. There's no real replacement across the league, let alone the Washington Capitals.
Bick Nizar, Randeep Janda here on The People's Show. We talk to him every Wednesday at 1:30. Longtime NHL goalie and now NHL analyst at dailyfaceoff.com. You can follow him on Twitter at MikeMcKenna56. Mike, how are you?
Man, I am doing well. You know what? Playoff hockey's still going, and I feel for the folks in Vancouver because it's not involving the Canucks, but here in St. Louis, it has a team that's still going, at least for the next couple hours. We'll see how this evening goes out in Colorado. It's been pretty exciting. A lot of happy friends around here, at least when the Blues are winning. But lately, not quite as much, guys. So we'll have to see how tonight's game plays out for them.
We do want to get to the Blues, but a few minutes ago, we were talking about the Battle of Alberta and the goaltending in that series. And, you know, what's really stunning is, I think even if Mike Smith got hot, you'd say, okay, you can see that, you know, goalies can get hot. I don't know if anyone really foresaw Jacob Markstrom struggling. Is there something that you noticed that might be the root of all this? Because it can't just be, well, Tanev's out of lineup, so the defense is bad, and now he's starting to slip. It does feel like it's a bit more internal on Jacob Markstrom.
Yeah, you know what, though? I looked at his clips today again to just see what was going on here, and I really didn't like the first game of the series against Edmonton. I thought he was awesome against Dallas. And, you know, I look at that first game, and the two goals that Zach Hyman scored, I didn't like either of those. You know, he was lingering in RVH on his post. Markstrom wasn't getting to his feet and getting set in time. Like, he just looked kind of passive from what I wanted to see from him. And I think that kind of just set the table. You know, these last three games, man, I think Edmonton's been so good offensively that I haven't seen a lot from Markstrom that I really disliked. It's been a pretty downhill sequence of the Oilers coming at him. But you look at last game and how the puck takes a funky bounce off the boards and he misplays it and it's in his net less than a minute into the game. That's just kind of a microcosm of these last several, I think, for Markstrom. And I do think, though, that he, when I really look at it, I think he's playing a little bit small for himself. You know, he's a big guy, but he's getting kind of low and wide, and then you look at how Edmonton's been able to score in tight, especially Kane and McDavid going around Markstrom, man, I'd sure love to see him get his stick involved. You know, he's given a clear lane across the front of the net, and I'd like to see him just be a little bit more aggressive. I really don't think he's that far off of what he did in Dallas. I didn't like game one of this series against Edmonton, but I think he's got a big battle as well as that top line's plan for Edmonton with McDavid, Dreisaitl, and Kane on it.
Yeah, the way that they come into with speed into that zone as well, you know, in transition, it's a problem for the defense as well. But, you know, you do have moments where a period, Jacob Markstrom's playing great, and then, you know, there's a bad moment or his team lets him down to a certain extent defensively. Let's talk to Mike Smith as well. We'll talk about the praise shortly, but I got to get your thoughts on the goal yesterday, Rasmus Anderson. From a goalie's perspective, does he ever see it? Where does he lose it? Like, what did you see on that goal?
Well, it's hard. You know, I saw him in the post-game presser, and he said he's never allowed a goal like that in his career. And I believe him, because you know what? You can seriously go 20 years in the National Hockey League without allowing a goal like that. It's an ultimate rarity. But, I mean, remember, Roberto Luongo allowed a goal that had to be called back that went off of Tim Peel's jockstrap and in the net at one point, the NHL referee. Weird things happen, okay? I think he lost it when three different Edmonton players in those dark navy and burnt orange jerseys that I really don't like, by the way, when they crossed over in front of Smith, the puck went right through them. And I'm guessing that's where he lost it because, man, he didn't react at all until it was past him. And that was a field goal. And it just, it's a rarity, man. And I think it's easier for a goalie to bounce back from something like that because you realize it's just a fluke, man. And your whole team knows it's a fluke. It's not like it's a bad goal. Like, it's not like the goalie just quit thinking or anything. You just couldn't find it. And I've been there before. I allowed a similar one during my career. Shot from the red line, hits a teammate stick at the blue. Goes like 20 feet in the air up and over me. I couldn't even find the thing. All I heard it do was make a noise when it hit the padding in the net behind me. So, you know, we've all been there, and I thought that Smith just shrugged it off and played phenomenal the rest of the way.
They've had success this series, and it hasn't really gone the way I think a lot of people expected. I think a lot of people expected Calgary to be the heavier team, the faster team, and just the more dominant team, and they're looking up 3-1. When I look at, like, okay, how has this flipped so much, and why isn't Calgary's forecheck being as effective? How much does Mike Smith's puck handling have to do with, you know, disrupting what Calgary wants to do when they don't have the puck?
Yeah, it's a big factor. And I mean, I think Calgary's even done a pretty good job of keeping it away from him. It's just that Smith is so good with it that he can get out and get it on his blade pretty quickly. And you really see this throughout the NHL. I mean, you even see it in the St. Louis series where Binnington isn't there anymore. And I think for Smith, it was sure exacerbated when you saw Mikko Koskinen hop in the net. You know, Koskinen, and this was game one, Koskinen is not a puck handler by any stretch, and he's certainly not Mike Smith. And I think that's a big reason why Smith has been so valuable to Edmonton, is that their breakout, he gets it. It's one pass to the D, one to the center, and see you later. And if he doesn't have that option, he finds another one, and it's out. And I know people can't stand it when he turns a puck over and it ends up in the back of the net, but those are rarities. Those are glorified moments that really don't happen as often as we think. Mike Smith probably handles 100 pucks or 200 pucks before he ever turns one, you know, makes a bad mistake like that. So I think it's invaluable for Edmonton, especially a team like Edmonton that's just so good in transition. When your goalie makes a good first pass and gives it to the D that's open, that gets you going up ice faster.
Well, you talked about St. Louis there, and it's stave off elimination season, the one of the buzz phrases of the playoffs in terms of staying alive for the Blues. And with Binnington, you know, one of the parts of his game that is really impressive, as you mentioned, puck handling. How do the Blues look different with Huso? Because it feels like, to a certain extent, you can't play as open, or you maybe have to be a little bit more conservative when you don't have that guy back there.
I think it's just made life more difficult for the St. Louis Blues in their own end, you know, across the board. And what's funny, though, is that the Blues were so good with Huso previously this season. But they weren't facing the Colorado Avalanche, and it's a team that you really have to slow down. And, you know, watching, especially being in the building and seeing how Binnington is just, he's so fluid with the puck. You know, he doesn't have one option. He has two or three options. And that's really similar to the top players in the NHL. That's how I define it to people when they ask me, well, Mike, you played in the American Hockey League a lot, and I did. Why didn't some of those players make the NHL? Well, because an NHL player sees an extra option that an American League player maybe not. They think the game better. Well, when Binnington has the puck on his stick, he's that same way. He sees an extra option, whereas Husso's pretty plain Jane. Like, if he doesn't have an option, he just rims it on the glass. And when he puts it on the glass, it ends up back in Colorado's stick an awful lot. And it's really just kind of awareness and confidence, and that's something that Binnington definitely has with the puck on his blade. And Husso's just a little bit more reserved, and I think that's allowed Colorado to keep the puck in the offensive zone an awful lot.
What was so jarring is, you know, we do look at St. Louis as, hey, one of the veteran teams, and look how consistent they were during the regular season. They were just kind of steady Eddie, climbing the standings, doing their job, and just focus all the time. And, like, I understand it's a big moment in a series, and Binnington goes down, but they completely unraveled. And in game four especially, you know, they were more focused on Nazem Kadri than they were trying to extend the series, get back into it, and, you know, extend their season. And now it looks like their season might be coming to a close here pretty quick. You obviously still compete. But, you know, how do they get their head screwed back on? And why do you think it went so quickly away from them, from a team we look at is so veteran savvy?
Mm-hmm. You know, I think for them, St. Louis lost their identity when Jordan Binnington ended up out of the games. But for me, they haven't been able to overcome the same problems that they did have in the regular season, which is kind of amazing to think for a team that finished as high in the standings as St. Louis did and with as many points. What they were good at this year was their power play and their rush game. St. Louis was outstanding at both of those. And the rush game has been completely nullified by Colorado. Colorado's kept a third man high in the zone. They've been diligent about their system work, playing on top of the puck. They've kept the Robert Thomas line from doing anything. Robert Thomas has been invisible in the series, which is a huge part for it's a big blow for the Blues. But they haven't been able to capture it 5-on-5. And their power play has been just as good. Now, Colorado, on the other hand, their rush chances, man, have been far greater than what St. Louis has had, and they've capitalized on them. So Colorado has taken away what St. Louis does best, and that is their rush game. St. Louis is still scoring on the power play, but they don't have their rush game, and that's a credit to Colorado.
You're listening to The People Show. We're joined by Mike McKenna of DailyFaceoff.com, former NHL goalie as well, former Vancouver Canuck. And, you know, on the other side of things, you look at Darcy Kemper. He's been solid, but is it fair to say he hasn't been challenged thus far? Because, you know, you can only save the pucks that are shot at you, but is there still a question of, all right, if there's a lot of high-end talent coming the other way, a lot of maybe the Edmonton Oilers, has he been challenged thus far in these playoffs?
Well, I want to be really careful with my answer here, especially as a proud card-carrying member of the goalie union, because you're always challenged when you're on the ice, and you're always challenged in the Stanley Cup playoffs. But I do think it's an accurate assessment to say that Darcy Kemper hasn't really had to steal a game yet, you know, and that's kind of where I look to it in terms of what's he faced for volume, because by the end of the second round, almost every team has a goalie that's stolen a game or two. You know, look at Tampa Bay. I mean, Vasilevsky's stolen a couple, Shesterkin, like, you can look across the board at how that happens. And I don't see this as a problem for Colorado. I think Kemper's managed it really well. He managed it really well playing for that team also, you know, for ostensibly the second and third part of the season. The first third wasn't great. But I've also seen Kemper and watched him and think, you know, I think he still kind of has another gear here. Like, he's allowed a couple goals to me that, you know, he's getting beat clean by shots occasionally on the wing. Like, I just think that there's a little bit more there. But I think he's a goalie that can easily handle that. And he's a goalie that can handle the lighter load until the bigger moment. But we're going to find out what he's made of sooner or later, because if they're up against Edmonton, he's going to face some high danger chances.
We were actually talking about that earlier. Who do you think presents a better matchup for Colorado? Calgary or Edmonton?
At this point, this is a tough one, obviously, but Edmonton is just, seems on fire. But what I think about Colorado that may be able to counteract Edmonton is, I think Colorado's depth is really, really good. And that's not that Calgary's isn't, but I just feel like Colorado at this stage would give fits to Edmonton more than Calgary. And I think Calgary might be able to grind on Colorado better if Calgary was able to just play their game and just worry about defense first, offense will take care of itself. Now, unfortunately for Calgary, you can't do that against Edmonton, because they're just that gifted offensively. But you've got McDavid over there doing whatever he wants. You can play as defensive as you like. He's still going to get opportunities, and they still might outscore you. So I think that if Calgary can get past Edmonton, they'd be tougher for Colorado. But right now, I think Edmonton's just now really starting to hit their stride. They're getting good goaltending and everything that they need to be able to advance.
The last two games in that Colorado-St. Louis series, it's been the Nazem Kadri show, right? Obviously, him scoring the hat trick last game, rising above the hate. Before that, even, you know, he had a goal in that game as well. He was a two-way, you know, monster in the game that Binnington eventually got injured in. When we start looking past the playoffs, what's his worth in UFA status? It feels like the fact that he is now producing at a high level offensively, but he's also got that discipline in his game, Mike, that number might be pretty high, won't it?
I think so. I mean, you're looking at a centerman now that Nazem Kadri is making $4.5 million, and he's at the end of a deal that's it's been there for, you know, this is a 6 year on it. So, you know, at the time that was a pretty friendly contract, even for the team in Toronto when he signed it. But you look at the premium now on centermen in the National Hockey League, and your top two centermen, if they're not entry-level players, you don't get them for less than $7 or $8 million. You know, I mean, if Matt Duchesne's playing for $8 million, where's Nazem Kadri? Okay, like and he's not old here either. I mean, he's 31, and that's going to factor in. So I don't know if Kadri's going to get a big, you know, seven-year deal or anything, but, like, I have to think that he's north of, you know, he's got to be $7.5 or $8 million, you'd think, easily. You guys agree with that? Because I don't see him coming in under that. For a second-line center that's been, at most of the year, was sitting top five in scoring, finished up, you know, top 10 or whatever in the National Hockey League. It'll be interesting because you look at him and he's focused. And the way he's everything, all the hate thrown at him and the racism and the garbage, I really admire the way he's done it. I don't like how he went into the crease hard on Binnington, but I admire how he's handled his business otherwise.
We were talking about it yesterday, and you know, term is hard to figure, but, you know, to your point, 7.5 at least seems like the right thing. I tend to look at it as total money, and then you can figure out the term thereafter. I thought, you know, he's probably going to get $40 million, somewhere in that range, at least. Yep. You know, he's 32, I think, this summer, so, you know, $40 million sounds about right.
Yeah, I think realistically, if I was a GM, for him going to be 32, I would want to be looking at something between a 4 and 6 year deal is where I'd be comfortable. And like you say, it's kind of total dollars, and you have to factor in also, like, if he's going to go somewhere that he thinks can win, do you spread out the years a little more? Mm-hmm. You know, where's your AAV? You know, I mean, not too dissimilar even from Giordano in Toronto. I mean, they were going to give him $1 million. He says, nah, I'll take $850 so we can make the team a little bit better. So, you got to wonder where Kadri will be with that, but I think seven and a half seems like the absolute bottom of where he's going to be, somewhere between 4 and 6 years, and the term will really dictate the rest of it.
Before we let you go, I do want to ask about the team that was eliminated, the Florida Panthers. What do they do in this offseason? Because, you know, we were talking about it yesterday, and I kind of made the point, it's like, I don't know if there's any one thing they can do that improves their team so much versus what Tampa Bay can do just by getting healthy and having Braden Point back. If you're Florida, like, what are you thinking going into this offseason?
Yeah, Florida is interesting because they really loaded up. Obviously, at the deadline, they brought in Giroux, they brought in Sherratt. I don't think that you need to do major surgery in Florida. I mean, I think to me the most important thing is just the amount of experience they gained. And I know that wasn't a very close series, 4-0, but Florida did do some things pretty well. If they could have gotten their power play going, that's a whole different story. So, I mean, that's the key thing for me is you look at the things that failed in playoffs. How do you improve those? Is it strictly personnel? Is it coaching? And I'm not suggesting that Andrew Burnett should be cast aside, because I thought he did a really nice job and he deserves another chance to take a look at, or another chance to be the head for a full season. But, you know, who do you bring in for assistance? You know, do you keep the same staff there? Like, those are things you can tweak. I'd like to see Florida bring in a bit of help permanently on the back end. I mean, I thought Sherratt was fine, but they could really use some more there. And I think the scoring is going to be there regardless with who they have. So I think you look at your coaching staff and you know, they're setting goal. So I'd probably look at the back end first in Florida.
Mike, we appreciate it as always. We'll get set for next week, and we'll be moving towards round 3.
by next week, I think we will be. That'll be exciting. Looking forward to it.
Can't wait. Mike McKenna at Mike McKenna 56, NHL analyst at dailyfaceoff.com, and longtime NHL goalie. Appreciate it as always. Next Wednesday, we'll chat with him.
Yeah, he mentions the back end for Florida for sure. They don't have that much money to play with, so you're going to have to potentially look at some value adds. And the coaching thing, I think, is, you know, something we talked about yesterday, where Andrew Brunette admits that the power play was something he couldn't figure it out. He couldn't, you know, write that situation. But the assistants as well, they don't have exactly experienced assistants behind the bench right now in Florida. So do you make a move at the top? You move off the interim and bring in somebody else? There's a lot of options on, you know, the coaching free agent class, if you want to call it that. Barry Trotz, you know, you go through the list. John Tortorella is getting interviews in Philadelphia. There's a bunch of, you know, new age options out as well, the kind of the next generation of coaches that we've talked about. Rick Tocchet's getting love, obviously doing his work for TNT. So there's plenty of options if you're looking to go experience or, you know, slightly younger, but maybe comes from a different background. So I think that's the big question for Florida is, do you come back with Brunette? Do you invest in him and say, hey, no, we believe what you can do. You got to make some changes. Or do you go and say, now is the time, we can't take any chances, and we're going for a tried and tested option behind the bench?
Vic Nazar, Randy Janda, before we go to break here, it's time for Turf Trivia.
Oh, yeah.
Turf Trivia. If you know the answer to the question we're about to ask you, you will win 2 tickets to the Nooner at the Nat on June 3rd as the Canadians take on Spokane. 650-650, get your phones ready. What are they answering, Randy?
Well, Surrey is dominating Turf Trivia.
Crushing.
Back-to-back wins, so let's see who wins today. Today's question.
You made it really difficult.
This one's a tough one.
Yeah.
This one is, I'll be surprised if we get more than 5 correct answers. But the challenge is out there. There were 6 former Canucks on the 2006 gold medal winning team for Sweden. The Sedins and Mattias Olin, who is entering the BC Hockey Hall of Fame this year. Congratulations.
This is why we're going with a Sweden flair today.
That's right. Those were 3. So the Sedins and Mattias Olin were 3 of those players. Name the other 3. The other 3 former Canucks on the 2006 gold medal winning team for Sweden. Sedins and Mattias Olin were 3 of them. Name the other 3.
650-650 with the answer. If you got the answer, we'll give you the answer and the winner. On the other side, also talk to Will Scouch. So if you have a prospect question, send him in. 650-650 as well from scouching.ca, McKeon's Hockey. He's on the way here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.